We're going to call the Energy Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee to order. We have three bills on our agenda for today, and the first one is Senate File 2470. I'm going to ask Senator Sparks to chair the meeting while I bring up this bill.
Senator Prettner-Sholin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill before you. Senate File 2470 is a bill that has come forward because of some tragic circumstances. Greg and Missy Smith are here to tell you Kelsey Smith's story. They have spearheaded an effort across the country to prevent this tragedy from happening elsewhere. I commend them on their work. This legislation would require cell phone providers to hand over cell phone records to law enforcement in the case of a missing person when there is a risk of threat or death or serious physical harm. This bill is pretty straightforward. It will give law enforcement another tool for protecting Minnesotans and hopefully prevent another scenario where law enforcement cannot get the necessary locational data from a cellular company to respond to emergencies of this nature. This bill has been passed in Kansas, and it's now being considered in Nebraska. This bill will strengthen the ability of Minnesota law enforcement to find a lost or a missing person when death or serious physical injury is possible. And at this time, I would like to invite Greg and Missy Smith to tell their story. And then Bob Bass from AT&T will also speak to the specifics of the legislation. And Mr. McDermott from Verizon also would like to speak on the issue. So I'd like to start with Greg and Missy Smith.
Welcome to the committee.
Welcome. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I want to thank you for letting me speak today and for considering such an important piece of legislation. My name is Missy Smith. I am the mother of Kelsey Smith. She is the young lady that was taken from a Target store in Overland Park, Kansas on June 2, 2007. Kelsey's body was recovered 4 days later on June 6, 2007. What does a parent go through when a child is missing? You don't eat because you don't know if your child is eating. You don't sleep because you wonder if they are sleeping. It is pure hell. What took so long to find Kelsey? One word, Verizon. I was on my way home from a wedding in Des Moines, Iowa, when our daughter Lindsay called me. She let me know that Kelsey was not answering her phone or text messages. I knew immediately that something was wrong. My husband, Kelsey's siblings, and John, her boyfriend, continued to try and reach her, as did I, for the last hour of my trip home. Sometime that night after arriving home, John explained that his uncle used to work for Sprint and had explained that our cell phone company could ping Kelsey's phone so we could locate her. It seemed simple enough. Little did we know. I called our cell phone provider. I explained that my daughter was missing and I needed to locate her. They told me that they were unable to do that. They explained I could get online and check her cell phone activity. We had contacted police and I believe had located her car. I know sometime that night my husband Greg also contacted them and was told the same thing. We had already checked her cell phone activity online. In July of 2007, we had a meeting with Verizon officials regarding what had occurred in Kelsey's case. It included the president of the Kansas-Missouri area and three lawyers. During that meeting, one of the lawyers basically said to us, we used incorrect terminology when requesting their help. we had used the word ping. Apparently, they didn't understand that. I told them to go back, check their protocol, and figure out where they had failed Kelsey and us as a family. I said I would follow up regarding this. After several months of not hearing anything, I called Nancy Bates, an administrative assistant. I explained to her why I was calling. She had the unfortunate job of calling me back. She said to me that the lawyers told her to tell me they found their protocol to be adequate. If their actions were adequate, I would hate to see what inadequate is. I can tell you this. If Verizon had acted in a more responsive manner, we probably would not be here today asking for this legislation. Let me be perfectly clear. In no way do we hold them responsible for Kelsey's death. I fully understand that no company can be perfect. I understand that employees are human and that mistakes will be made. That is just part of being human. I believe that this legislation will reduce those errors. Danny Strigel, I hope that's how you pronounce it, the president and chief executive officer of Verizon in October 2006 included a letter in the Verizon Wireless Code of Conduct, which would have been the protocol in place at the time of Kelsey's murder. I have included a copy of his letter for you. In it, he speaks of integrity going beyond laws and policies to also include the spirit of doing the right thing. Unfortunately, Verizon did not act in the spirit of doing the right thing. In September of 2007, Tanya Ryder, of Washington State, had been missing 8 days. Fortunately, she was found alive at the bottom of a ravine in her wrecked vehicle. Verizon, her carrier, according to her husband on Larry King, was not helpful in locating her. Sheriff Farrar of the King County Sheriff's Office stated that there has to be a more timely way to get cell phone records in a missing persons case. She believed Mrs. Ryder could have been found 3.5 days sooner. This was weeks after we had met with Verizon. There are many more stories just like these regarding cell phone providers not turning over critical information in a timely manner. Recently, again, in Overland Park, another 18-year-old young lady, Keely Alia, was missing. Her body was discovered 6 days later. Some of the same police officers in Kelsey's case contacted Verizon to try and get cell phone locate information. The representative stated they did not understand what the police were asking for. The same officers, the same police department as in Kelsey's case, they knew what to ask for. In both cases, for Kelsey and Keely, text messaging locate information was vital in locating them. Our youth are growing up with a cell phone as a norm. They text instead of talk. This was evident recently with our daughter Dakota's 4,671 text messages in 1 month. According to the 2009 CTIA Wireless Association figures, 135.2 billion text messages were sent monthly in the United States. There were nearly 277 million wireless customers. Over 20% of U.S. households are wireless only. All of them are potential victims that could be helped from this legislation. As my husband and I have traveled around the country and have met with different law enforcement agencies, we have found Verizon is not the only company that this type of situation occurs with. Law enforcement has run into situations with almost every company, especially the smaller, less known companies. Law enforcement in Kansas supported the Kelsey Smith Act. Recently, I testified in Nebraska regarding this legislation. I was informed that in Nebraska, state troopers must get permission from the governor to testify before their legislators. They testified in support of the bill. The Kelsey Smith Act in Kansas was signed by then-Governor Kathleen Sebelius on April 17, 2009. This law has been used since. What this piece of legislation does is allow law enforcement to determine what is an emergency situation, not a customer service rep on the other end of a phone. We train our police. They are the best ones to make this decision. I truly believe that this legislation will save a life. It will also save money. How much money was spent those 3 extra days looking for Kelsey? How many man hours? How many young people and volunteers were invested in bringing her home? All the while, Verizon had the ability to let us know where she was. After they finally did the right thing and sent an engineer to the tower that Kelsey's phone last made contact with, Kelsey was located in 45 minutes. According to C.S. Lewis, experience that most brutal of teachers, but you learn. My God, do you learn. In 2007, there were 4,176 young people ages 17 to 24 murdered in the United States. How many of those victims had a cell phone? I personally knew of one of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. Thanks for having us here today. The Kelsey Smith Act was signed into law in Kansas, as my wife said, April 17th of 2009 by then Governor Sebelius, and it's been used twice by law enforcement in our state that I'm aware of, both with favorable results. The need for this law to me is self-evident. As several people have used the term, it's a no-brainer. This law can save people's lives. In the current budget crisis that the federal government and all state governments find themselves in, this is a fiscally neutral bill. It doesn't cost anything to enact this, but it adds so much protection to the citizens of any state. I can speak from the experience of a law enforcement officer with 18 years of experience. I was a law enforcement officer when Kelsey went missing. Not being allowed to participate in the investigation in my own daughter's case was absolutely undescribable. Trying to deal with it as a law enforcement officer and as a father was an emotional situation that was unique and hard for me to process. But as I said, I know this bill can and will save lives. Time is of the essence when a person goes missing. If there is not a sufficient or good lead within the first 48 hours of a missing person case, the chances of bringing that person home safe and sound are almost zero. This bill can expedite an investigation and gives law enforcement a huge advantage and a jump start. This bill has been introduced in Washington, D.C. by Representative Todd T. Hart in Kansas, and there it's known as H.R. 3803. Unfortunately, it is stalled in committee due to the political climate in Washington. I am not of the opinion that it's going to move very fast, but I am perfectly willing to go state to state to make sure that this law does pass. The state of Nebraska, as my wife said, is moving towards passage of this bill. There it is known as LB 735. Here in Minnesota, I understand in this committee, it's known as SF 2470. I urge you to pass SF 2470. Lastly, I can speak from the perspective of a father whose daughter has gone missing. The agony of not knowing what has happened to your daughter, where she is for 4 days, not knowing in what condition she is, what's happened to her, is indescribable. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. The refusal of a cell phone company to cooperate with a simple request and then to refuse to cooperate with a subpoena from law enforcement that could have alleviated days of anguish, countless man hours of police time, as well as federal agency time that were involved in the search for Kelsey, is inexcusable in my book. My wife has said that it takes either lawsuits or legislation to make big corporations take notice, and I agree. I respectfully request that this committee pass SF 2470 out of committee so that it can be heard by the Senate as a whole and passed into law. The people of Minnesota, and for that matter, every state, deserve the protection this bill offers. Thank you.
We would be willing to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of the witnesses, members? Senator Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for your testimony. I guess I have some details that I'd like to understand. Number one is, how old was Kelsey?
Kelsey was 18.
Thank you. And Mr. Senator Chair,
Carlson.
And who owned the cell phone?
Who did.
It was you were paying the bill.
That's correct. It was in my name.
Thank you.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, who did you get the subpoena from, and what was the process that you went through to get that subpoena, and why didn't that seem to be enough to require Verizon to give you the information you needed?
I believe it was the district attorney's office that subpoenaed Verizon, And from our understanding of things, it asked for Kelsey's cell phone pings. And that's incorrect terminology at that time.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Smith, so even with a subpoena, Verizon refused to give the information you needed.
That's correct.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I have to apologize. I was just about a minute late to the very beginning of your testimony, but you're all from Kansas, and you're going from state to state to try to pass this law?
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to say that's incredible. That's incredible. Thank you for doing that, and thank you for coming to Minnesota.
Thank you very much for having
us. Help us to protect people here in our state, too.
Thank you.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Smith, for sharing your story. And maybe this is a question for the telephone. What could you describe, because I would say ping, I don't understand what that word means. Can you describe the process? It sounds like they have to go to a tower, the last tower that received her transmission, and then we can ask if you're not sure. But
I have a little bit of knowledge about this after 2.5 years of dealing with this. They do not have to go to the tower. By going to the tower, they could narrow down where to look for her. There are three different locates on the top of a tower, and depending on how your phone reaches that tower, it can tell them what direction it's going to. But they do not have to go to the tower to do that. But, yes, the cell phone providers would probably be better at describing that than I am.
Yeah, basically, in our daughter's case, the police showed us evidence that they were going to present at trial that showed basically a locate of her phone from the time that she went missing down the highway that the person took her to the point that her body was located. So it's possible to do it without going to the tower. We do know that much.
And it's called locate information. As you're traveling, your cell phone constantly talks to all the different towers. And depending on how busy a tower is or the signal strength to that tower will determine which tower will pick up the information. And a locate is when a call or a text message actually comes in or ends. And one thing I just want to make clear is cell phone companies need to, when they locate, also reserve the text messaging locate. That is a completely different system than talking. And our kids don't talk. When our daughter had 4,671 text messages, she had 15 talk minutes. That's it.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and I've seen the bill.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you again both very much for your testimony. It was very
thank you very much for
having
us.
Difficult, but you've done a wonderful job.
Thank you.
Yes, you can back with you.
Senator Prettner-Solon, do you have an amendment that you would like to offer at this time?
Yes.
Mr. Fuller could maybe help us with it.
What I would like to do is to amend the title to call it the Kelsey Smith Act. And maybe Mr. Fuller has the appropriate language.
Mr. Chairman, members, this would be in the body of the bill, and we can amend the title accordingly if you want to. Oops, I think you do. Page 1, after line 6, insert a new section 1. I'll give this to the secretary. This act shall be known as the Kelsey Smith Act. And then renumber the rest of the sections, and we'll amend the title accordingly.
Okay.
It's reflected in the title as well.
Members understand the amendment. Senator Prettner-Solon would move the oral amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Thank you. Next on the witness list, we have Mr. Bass. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Bob Bass, president of AT&T Minnesota, and I'm here today on behalf and to discuss Senate File 2470. As you have heard, this bill addresses the need for wireless companies like AT&T to provide information on caller location during life-threatening emergencies, especially when the victim cannot call 911, and we've heard the testimony from the Smiths. From AT&T's perspective, and I'm speaking only from AT&T's perspective, We use a state-of-the-art system for responding to these requests, and I can talk about that in further detail. But for this bill, Senate File 2470, AT&T supports this bill. I'm not sure if you want me to go through our process, Mr. Chair, if that would help you understand.
Sure.
Currently, AT&T operates under the Electronic Communications Privacy Act. And what that means is it's a federal law which specifically provides that telecommunication carriers may provide such information to a governmental entity if the provider in good faith believes that the emergency involving the danger of death or serious physical injury to a person. In those cases, under this act, the process we go by is, for instance, somebody would call one of our service reps, and they would say that, you know, my son or daughter was supposed to be home at 10 p.m. He or she has never, she's always or he's always on time. It's now 5 o'clock in the morning. Can you go find her on the network? As the Smiths mentioned, somebody had mentioned to them that we can go out and find cell phones on the networks. And in that case, what our service reps are trained to do, not because they don't want to provide this information, but they're also balancing the need to protect the privacy of our customers. That's also important. We will then tell them to call law enforcement and report this activity, that there's a situation where they need to locate somebody. We work with law enforcement every day on this process. Law enforcement will investigate this particular situation, and if they determine, they're the experts at this, that this is a situation where somebody needs to be, there needs to be a search for them, they'll call us. They have we have a national number that we've distributed to law enforcement across the country. They will call us. We will then fax to them what's called an exigent circumstances form, where they're going to describe exactly what they're looking for. They may ask us for a call record. They may say that, you know, we found in our investigation that this person was missing at 8 o'clock. We want to know if there were calls made from 8 o'clock until a certain time. They may say, could you also go out and use the equipment that you guys have to find the device on the network. We operate a center in Florida. It's called our National Mobility Locate Center, and this is where all this activity goes through. We get that information from law enforcement, and we have a manager and a supervisor who's on. Let me back up a little bit. The center is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And we have somebody there who only handles these types of requests. And they need to determine from law enforcement if this is a situation that falls under that, as I mentioned, the Electronic Communication Privacy Act, and this is something where there's serious injury or death is involved. Because there are other situations where law enforcement comes to us and they have to have a warrant, which the warrant is in situations where it might be part of a criminal investigation or if they're tracking a fugitive. In those cases, they need to either, you know, go with a wiretap or a pen register or some other form of a warrant to us in those cases. And so it sounds like a cumbersome process, but it goes very quickly. Our supervisor or manager on site makes the determination that it falls under this emergency or personal injury type situation. And then, so it falls under, let me go to the point where it falls under this search. Our National Locate Center then makes the determination they're gonna follow what's on that form from law enforcement. And they go through, and this Mrs. Smith was pretty accurate on how it works. Directionally, I'm not sure where I'm looking, but you know, for instance, we have a cell site that sits just above the Capitol on University Avenue. So if you're an AT&T customer, every minute or so, it pings that site. It pings one over by the 94. It pings one over by XL Energy Center. Your cell phone is constantly contacting those cell sites because it needs to know where to transfer to. So we have all of that information, and we can triangulate and find a device on our network within 50 to 100 meters. And so that's the process that we use to find under these circumstances. But again, this is balancing what law enforcement is requesting us to find someone with the privacy of our customers.
Senator Sharon.
I just have a couple questions. This ping that occurs, does that occur whether I have my phone off or on?
If your phone is off, it's... Mr. Chair, through you to Senator Sheeran. If your phone is off, it's not going to. But there will be records on the network that will show when the last time your cell phone was pinged on our network.
And if Senator the Sheeran. Thank you very much. I'm going to try to pull my question back up because I've lost track of it a little bit here. Give me a moment. I'll try to pull my question back up. Thank you. Somebody else can ask a question if they have one.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that because you've got these trained people to field these calls, could you give us an idea from the time a parent might call the police or from the time that that happens to the time that you're able to attempt to locate, how much time might elapse?
Mr. Bass.
Mr. Chair, through you to Senator Rummel, it's a matter of minutes. It's not, I know the way I described it, it sounded like a very cumbersome process, but them filling out the information and doing the due diligence, sending it to us, there's a manager sitting there. We get about 150 of these calls every day. They vary. Some of these are warrant type searches, and then a period, and some of these are also the emergency searches as well. And that's why our center, our folks are very good at what they do. We know time is of the essence, and again, we're balancing to make sure that it's not something that requires a warrant, because again, we're balancing the privacy of our customers as well. There are situations when we kick the form back to law enforcement and say, I'm sorry, this is something that requires a warrant, and this does not fit the criteria under what we're following today. And the one thing that this bill does do is the federal act says that carriers may provide this information, may voluntarily, and this says shall. The state law will say shall.
And Mr. Chair,
Partner-Sol.
We neglected to put these forms in your packet, but this is the form. I believe it's filled out by law enforcement.
Correct.
By law enforcement, and then faxes it to AT&T, and they are able to then locate that for you, and we'll make copies available to you.
Senator Sheeran.
I do not remember. So under this process that you're describing, who owns the cell phone or pays for the cell phone is not relevant?
Mr. Bass?
Mr. Chair, through you to Senator Sheeran. I don't think that it's the ownership issue. It's the – because, again, if you were to call to try and locate somebody, it's going to be determined by law enforcement that we're trying to find a device. So we're not looking for a particular name. We're looking for a device. And law enforcement provides us with the circumstances surrounding that particular piece, all the background. So we're finding a device, and we're not looking at ownership or whether it's part of a if it's somebody paying for an account or something like that. It's strictly, hypothetically, it would have a number, 651, 799, whatever.
So and talking about what I think is really would be a helpful tool, I'm trying to think about another situation where somebody is an abusive person, is trying to locate somebody that is trying not to be located for good reasons of fear of assault or abuse of some nature. What are the protections so that it's used for the purpose, a law like this would be used for the purposes for which it's intended and not to give access to someone who's trying to harm someone?
Mr. Bass.
Mr. Chair, through you again to Senator Sheeran. And that's why the pieces are in place in the process where, because we do get people that call up and they'll call us straight, somebody will call up and say, hi, I'm Officer so-and-so from the St. Paul Police and I'd like to find, this person's missing. Can you find this person? And it's actually a phishing exercise, phishing, where they're looking to try and to circumvent a process, which is why we've got these situations where we want law enforcement, when they contact us, we fax the form back to them. They send it to us. We verify that it is law enforcement. That's why our service reps will not take the call directly from somebody saying, will you find, my son, my daughter, my wife, my dad, those sorts of situations.
Thank you. So the real key, Mr. Bass, is the law enforcement trigger piece. That's that's what you talked about, the balance between privacy, but yet making sure you can respond quickly.
Yeah, because
if an incident arises.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions of the witness?
It's yours.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bass. Oh, Mr. Carlson, sorry. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had one question that is just an extension of what you just said. Do you help people find their phones? In case of a lost phone, because I know of people that have lost their phones.
That's a good idea.
Mr. Chair, through you to Senator Carlson, I look over and see Senator Anderson, and I remember that fondly.
We did that bill last year, Mr. Chair.
We do help people locate their phone. What we'll do, if you lose your phone, there's a number of things, Mr. Chair, through you to Senator Carlson. What we do is there's ways to locate the device. First thing we're going to do is try and shut it off because, as Senator Anderson remembers, when your cell phone is lost or stolen, we don't want those additional charges on there. But it's a little different than finding somebody who's lost in the process because we could also run into a situation where I'm just going to give a hypothetical. You're stalking somebody, and you want to find them, and you say, "Hi, I lost my phone, and the number is." And in those cases, we're going to use a different way to try and find that device. But I don't. We're not going to use this process to find your phone in that sense.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. It was very helpful,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Olsen.
So would you recommend your own form as like a boilerplate form for other telecommuting companies? I mean, this seems like I don't understand some of the breakdown here, but I suspect your people surely do. I guess another question of part of my question would be, would we prescribe legislatively what this form might be? That might be to Senator Solon, but... Or would we allow the companies to develop their own form?
Senator Prettner-Soul?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Olsen, we're informed. There already is federal legislation that says that companies may use the locator system to locate people in emergencies. And the problem is that many of the companies comply with that and do that. Not all of them have for fear of some liability. And so by changing it to shall, they will be required to use that system to locate missing persons. And it then affords them some protection from liability.
But I mean, this form seems like it's the proper form. It looks like AT&T has developed a good form. Do other companies use a similar form then, or... Do we have any idea of that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, I don't know. They all have a system, though, but by which they can locate people.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bass. Next, we have Mr. McDermott on the list. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, members of the committee, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike McDermott. I'm the Executive Director of State Public Policy in the Midwest for Verizon Wireless. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to testify on this important piece of legislation. As the father of a daughter and two sons, and as well as the brother of six sisters, I'd like to express my heartfelt condolences to the Smith family, and I was able to talk to them before the hearing to express personally my heartfelt condolences for their tragic loss of their daughter, Kelsey. In addition, the Verizon family also shares their grief for their loss. I'm pleased to inform the committee that Verizon Wireless supports and endorses this important legislation. We further commit to working with the Smith family to pass similarly structured legislation in every state in which it's introduced, and a fact I also shared with the Smiths before the hearing. Mr. Chair, if I may, Verizon has a strong working relationship with law enforcement community. We work hard to keep them informed of our policies and procedures for all types of document procurement, including information that pertains to an emergency. In fact, I have a press release and letter of commendation from the Sheriff of King County, Washington, praising Verizon Wireless for acting quickly to provide location information related to the Tanya Ryder case. Ms. Ryder, as you learned earlier, was the woman who was trapped in a car that went into a ravine and was found, I think, about 8 days later with the help of cell phone location technology. In her press release dated October 4th, 2007, Sheriff Rahr said of Verizon Wireless, "We are very pleased with their level of concern and their willingness to help in this investigation." She added, "In less than an hour after our exigent circumstances request, Verizon Wireless provided the address of the cell tower last hit by Tanya's cell phone. She was found just a few hours later." Also, while I cannot speak for the other wireless providers in the industry, I believe they share our commitment to providing records in a timely manner, especially in an emergency. This, of course, is important to all wireless providers, not just Verizon Wireless, like the case involving Kaylee Aaliyah, who was referenced in Mrs. Smith's testimony, and who actually, from what I understand, was actually a Sprint customer. And for the record, I wanted to make that distinction that she was, from our knowledge, a Sprint customer, not Verizon Wireless. And like AT&T, we man a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week law enforcement response team. I have a brochure here that I'll share with the committee. 24/7, 365 days, that also provides the information to law enforcement when they contact us. And all the information is spelled out in the brochure. I thank you for this opportunity to address the committee, and I'll do my best to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. McDermott. Any questions? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McDermott, just one question. How long have you had the call center operational?
Mr. McDermott?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl, that's a question I can't answer. I know it's been years. It's not a recent development.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Sullivan.
I'd like to ask Mr. McDermott then why you did not respond when the Smiths asked you to respond.
Mr. McDermott?
Mr. Chair, Senator Prettner-Sullivan, I'm not prepared, nor can I answer any questions involving the Kelsey Smith matter.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Your testimony seems to conflict with the Smith's testimony about Tanya Ryder in Washington, where her husband, you know, why did it take 8 days? And then all of a sudden, once, you know, the sheriff stated, or at least in the written testimony, it would have been like 3.5 days sooner. So what was the holdup in that? Do you know?
Mr. McDermott?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the only thing I could tell you is that I have and I'll share it with the committee if you would like right now, or the press release from the sheriff herself indicating that we provided that information with 1 hour. Whether or not the husband on Larry King had formed his opinion on something other than what the sheriff believed, her praising Verizon Wireless was clear in her press release, and also the letter of commendation from Detective Thien Doe of the Major Crimes, who indicates that Verizon did indeed turn over the records in that particular case for locating Mrs. Ryder. Brochure's already going? Okay, she took them. Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr.
Thank you.
Next, Mr. Bagnelli, did you want to make a few remarks? Or not? Okay. Senator Prettner-Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, if there are no further questions or comments, then I move that Senate File 2470, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to Judiciary.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Thank you. Is Senator Bach here? Okay. I understand he's on his way. We're missing both of our chief authors right at the moment. Senator Dibble, are you prepared to present? Okay. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 2535. This is a fairly simple and straightforward bill. What it does, members, is it just simply adds a little bit of language to the existing cable franchise law. And what it would accomplish is clarifying that in those instances where a local phone company has been asked to provide cable service in a given area, that phone company can provide service, but provide that service to the full service territory that it has within an existing municipality, so that it's clear that if, in fact, the service territory for that particular telephone company is not the entire outer limits of the entire city, it wouldn't have to provide that sort of service to an area that it doesn't, in fact, have a service territory in. It wouldn't have to go encroach, for example, into another telephone company's service territory. Members are probably aware from their own experience and past discussions in front of this committee that the distinctions between cable companies and telephone companies and wireless and you name it are becoming less distinct. Cable companies are providing telephone and internet service. Telephone companies are providing cable and internet service as well. And so the technologies are becoming a lot more blended. And we're also finding that consumers are very, very interested in having more choice and more competition available to them, and this is seeking a way to, in fact, accomplish that. Some situations that have cropped up around the metropolitan area really illustrate the challenge that we have in front of us, where cities have asked, have issued RFPs and asked for companies to come in and see if they can't be responsive and provide a proposal to provide cable service, either in an effort to provide a little bit of choice and some competition so that consumers have some choice in quality service and price, et cetera, or, in fact, to provide service where none exists. Even though our cable franchise law requires cable service providers to provide service to an entire city limit, they're exempted or accepted in those instances where they don't have, for example, 40 houses per mile. And so there are gaps in a number of areas in our communities, even in the metropolitan area, from cable service. And it can present quite a bit of difficulty for those consumers. It's important to keep in mind when you're thinking about that In fact, cable companies are getting into the telephone business and providing telephone service that competes head-to-head with these telephone companies, but they themselves aren't required to provide that service to the telephone service area. And, of course, the telephone service areas were developed long ago in a different era, many, many years ago, and really weren't mindful of existing municipal boundaries, or, in fact, those municipal boundaries did not exist at that time. So we got a little mismatch here, and so we're just trying to clarify in statute, you know, I think what is a worthwhile public policy goal, and that's allowing these telephone companies not to cherry pick, select, you know, where their most profitable business is, but in fact they do have to serve the entire service territory if they're going to be responsive to these cable franchise RFPs when cities step forward and ask for this sort of thing for their cities. That's my overview, Madam Chair, and we have a few folks. I know Senator Roebling was going to be here. She's on her way, and she was going to provide a few comments. So, maybe we can jump into hearing from some of the other witnesses who would like to speak in favor of this proposal.
Okay. Senator Frank Boyles first.
Whatever order we have typed up in the agenda, which I don't actually have with me. I have another list. I don't know if it's the same order.
Mr. Boyle, city manager from Prior Lake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Frank Boyles. I am city manager of the city of Prior Lake. I have been in that capacity for 17 years. I've had the opportunity to negotiate and have approved a franchise agreement with Mediacom for cable television purposes back in 1999. They actually took over from a company called Triax. And more recently, we approved a franchise agreement with Integra Telecom for IP TV services in the city of Prior Lake. Prior Lake, if you don't know, is a south of the river community, 23,000 persons, growing community, 18.3 square miles, 14 lakes, 90% residential, end of advertisement. had to get that in. I want to clarify before I say anything more, and I will be very brief because I know time is of the essence. I am not a Mediacom basher. I'm not here to testify against one company or the other. If the circumstances were reversed, I'd be telling you the same thing. So this is not anti-Mediacom or anti any company for that matter. Four quick points. First, why did the city of Prior Lake go about issuing a second franchise? Second, where do we stand today? Third, how is Prior Lake impacted by current circumstances? And finally, how does the Prior Lake situation apply to the rest of the state of Minnesota in its various municipalities and townships? Why did we elect to go about issuing a second franchise? Well, it's our belief that competition is good, and we have experienced over the years a large number of concerns by customers, which the city felt inadequate to be able to address. In some cases, inadequate because our powers have diminished over the years as federal legislation have rolled back the regulatory responsibilities of cities. So we thought, how do we crack this nut? Well, our perspective was let's work together with companies who might be able to provide an alternate franchise agreement in the city, and we did precisely that. I contacted Integra if I contacted them once. I contacted them many times over the years and encouraged them to get into this business. They did ultimately elect to do so. And so we went through the process of issuing a franchise, negotiating an agreement that was neither more burdensome nor less favorable than the one that had been issued to Mediacom. We went through the public hearing process, et cetera, and we do have a franchise agreement. The glitch is there's a provision in state statute which others might interpret to mean that the service territory for Integra must be the same territory as the corporate limits of the city of Prior Lake. Well, if you've been around at all, you know that territories' limits are certainly not coterminous by any means, school districts, counties, and even telephone service areas. So therein lies the problem. And so today we find ourselves with a fully executed franchise agreement muddled in the Court of Appeals, just having accepted briefs with oral arguments scheduled for March knowing full well, at least if I believe the jungle drums here, that this will be something that goes to the Supreme Court, and we will be delayed probably up to another year. We don't want others to find themselves in the situation that Prior Lake finds itself in, and Prior Lake, more importantly, its residents. So for Prior Lake, there will be no competition for another year as a result of what I call a glitch. Secondly, there'll be a great deal of costs, estimating hundreds of thousands, or at least $100,000 in legal fees, which will be paid by whom? The consumers, the customers of Integra, and of Mediacom, because they're certainly a party to the litigation. This is unproductive time. It's not valuable to anyone, in my estimation, except perhaps the attorneys involved. And our residents do not deserve such a delay. To other cities, and there's 855 of them in Minnesota, as you well know, and hundreds of townships, this could mean the same kind of problem, the same kind of litigation. And I don't think that's a desirable public policy for us to have. We should be encouraging competition, in my estimation. In fact, the city of Savage, our sister city, has also just issued a franchise. But their franchise agreement, interestingly enough, is dependent on how things go with our litigation. That tells you the nature of the problem here. So I would recommend that you pass language which clarifies this matter. Certainly the problem, I think, has shown itself. The new language is not retroactive, so the city of Prior Lake, sorry, we just go about our business. It applies only to new circumstances. The language proposed is narrow. It doesn't try and reinvent the wheel. It doesn't open all of those cobwebs that are out there. It does try to focus on this issue and this issue only. And for those reasons, we would recommend that you do support this legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Biles. Are you going ahead with this process in building out your network while the court case is going on?
Madam Chair, that is a decision for Integra to decide, because it is their infrastructure being built. It's my understanding that they are moving forward in that regard. Indeed, and Dave Cundy would probably be vice president of the company, would be in a better position to comment on that.
Okay.
We hope they move forward.
Okay. And Senator Roebling, I'd invite you to come and join us at the table if you like. Any other questions or comments? Senator Roebling, would you like to add anything?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. As you've already heard, this is a very important issue to people in our area, because they are looking for choice. They're looking for options. They're looking for competition that will potentially improve services, because there is competition in the area. We often know that that's the case, that we see improvements all around for customers when they have a choice of going to one place or another for their services or goods. And so having that option and being from an area where we have seen a lot of growth in parts of each community, but because of annexation issues in particular, I'm thinking of Savage. So they took in most of a township at one point, which is still partly rural, but it wouldn't have to be served by cable, because not all of the rural area meets the requirement for building out. But there's telephone service throughout the community. And so it makes sense to allow that to occur where a telephone company could make the service available, where there is either no current cable service, except if you put up a satellite dish, or if there's only one current business there. And so that's what we're asking for, and it's a clarification of the state law, because it is unclear right now if a full build-out is required whenever a franchise is given in a community. And so in order to make that clear, we're asking for this change.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Senator Sharon?
Well, I just I wanted to react a little bit to the city manager. I'm sorry, I don't have your name in front of me.
Boyles.
Boyles. you talked about the litigation that's occurring now as litigation that really isn't benefiting anybody except the attorneys that are involved in the litigation process. And I just want to respond to that because I think that's invalid to say about attorneys. They are representing the interests of parties that have something to say that needs to be resolved in front of the court where there's hopefully a fair and impartial process going on. So I just am certain that those who are putting their money into trying to have their perspective heard on this would not agree that the only benefactors are the litigators. And so I'll be interested to hear, and I hope we can hear, what that issue is that relates to probably the very issue of competition, that the request is for competition, but there's also an issue of an environment in which the competition is fair. So I'm hoping that we're going to be talking about that so that I understand fully the implications of what we're voting on here.
Senator Dibble?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Sharon. Your point is well taken, and I completely agree with you. And don't begrudge anyone's right to pursue their interests in court. And, you know, there is a fair discussion about fairness. And I think, of course, fairness is in the eye of the beholder in this particular debate. I think that this approach creates more fairness and creates the opportunity for competition. But your point is well taken as a point of principle, and I appreciate that.
Any further questions of the current testifiers? Okay, thank you. We'll call on Dave Kundi then, General Manager at Scott Rice Telecom.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Kundi, and I'm the general manager of Scott Rice Telephone Company based in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Scott Rice Telephone Company is a subsidiary of Integra Telecom and has been providing local telephone service in Prior Lake, Savage, Elko, Newmarket, and surrounding communities for over 60 years. We have our service territory depicted on the screen. I believe it's on the second page of your packets, maybe a little easier to read. The colored blocks represent each of the cities or townships that our telephone service territory touches. There are many of them. The red line depicts the boundaries of our service territory as it was determined by the Public Utilities Commission. These boundaries were drawn decades ago, prior to much of the development in this area, leaving a mismatch between our service territory and the municipal boundaries of the communities that we serve. A few years ago, we had a discussion with Prior Lake City Manager Frank Boyles about the possibilities of providing competitive cable services in our community. We researched recent technological advances and found that cable services, including high-definition television, can now be effectively delivered over 20 to 30 megabit high-speed broadband connections. We subsequently responded to the city's public notices with a proposal to offer service to all residents within our service territory in Prior Lake. Now, this is a map of Prior Lake. Once again, this should be in your packets if it's difficult to read on the screen. You'll notice in the upper left-hand area, it's green. That would be the Quest serving area. So Quest provides local phone service there. In the south and western portions, or southeastern portions of the screen, it's pink, and that's where Integra provides service today. Currently, the residents on the north side of the city have a competitive triple play option. They can get that from Quest in a bundled service offering. They can get it from Mediacom in a bundled triple play service offering. The residents in the southern portions of the city do not have this choice. After a six-month process, Integra was finally awarded a cable franchise by the city of Prior Lake in June of last year. Following that, the incumbent monopoly cable provider, Mediacom, chose to sue the city, as we talked about earlier. It is our goal to provide triple play services to our customers in the other municipalities and townships in our service area, and it goes quite a bit further into the southern area. So this has had the predictable effect of chilling our discussions with these additional communities and municipalities and townships. We are asking for a clarification of the statute to make it clear that local governments have the authority to award franchises to telephone companies to provide video services where network already exists. Our next slide indicates the customer benefits that can accrue to a competitive offering. Certainly, triple play competition, quality improvements. We're a local company with 24/7 service, live answering, 100% digital transmission, 230-plus channels, 40 of them high definition. This is all now possible over high-speed broadband connections. The opponents of this legislation will likely argue that telephone companies should be required to extend network and overbuild cable companies and other telephone companies. However, it just isn't economically feasible for telephone companies like mine to do so. To overbuild both Quest and MediaCom and enter into direct competition with two or three other cable or telephone companies, including satellite providers, would be financially impossible for our company. When you are the third or fourth provider going into enter an area, you can only expect 10 to 20% market share. We simply cannot create a positive business case that justifies the investment in the cable plant to serve all the residences in the other areas of the cities where we where we don't serve today. The majority of the monopoly incumbent cable television companies have been providing phone service for years. The Minnesota PUC rules allow them to offer telephone services wherever they have network. There were no build-out requirements placed on cable TV companies to get into the phone and internet service business. Therefore, cable companies have been able to offer triple play services and capabilities without having to expand to their service areas. It seems only fair that telephone companies be permitted to do the same thing. Prior Lake is like an anchor tenant for me. Half of my customers exist in Prior Lake. If we are unable to provide services to Prior Lake, we would likely be unable to continue to expand service and provide these services to the rest of the communities that we serve. We would face these similar obstacles with each community. A good example of this is Credit River Township, which is just to the east of Prior Lake. This is a map of Credit River Township, once again in your packet. 2 weeks ago, we had a public hearing where we appeared before the Township Board of Supervisors. We offered a plan whereby every line and every road that's green on that map, we would provide cable television service by year-end 2010. That's 85% of Credit River Township. MediaCom currently serves the orange section of that map, which is less than 20% of the township. MediaCom objected to our application and objected to the Credit River Township giving us a franchise, even though we were going to serve 85% of the township. I would remind everyone that in the white areas of that map, those residents have no cable television service today at all from anyone. They only have satellite as an option. So we would be bringing services to 85% of the township, yet because of this reference to the state law and its ambiguity, there is concern about whether we would be able to do that or not.
Point out the issue is Frontier.
The issue about why only 85% is on the right side of the map is Frontier service territory. That's the other 15% of Credit River Township that we don't serve today. And so, once again, I cannot make a case to overbuild another telephone company's service area. So, in summary, I'd like to ask your support for this legislation for the following reasons. First of all, broadband expansion. It takes a 20 to 30 megabit pipe or broadband connection to each home to deliver this television service. That expands broadband service to everybody that gets this television service from me. Secondly, private investment in jobs. I'm talking about spending a couple $1 million to roll this out. I'm also going to hire people. I expect to augment my workforce by at least 10% when I go into this business in order to meet customer demand for orders and to service these new customers. Also, the opportunity to bring cable service to thousands of unserved households just in my territory that don't have any cable television service today and must only rely on satellite. Competition is good. We all see the things that come from competition, more quality, lower prices. As an example, we have already gotten a waiting list of over 650 customers that are interested in our service. We have not publicized. We have not advertised. Customers have just read that there are council meeting minutes and have called in and are interested. The last item is minimal public right-of-way disruption. Obviously, if I've got telephone cables and lines in the ground, I don't have to tear up the streets and roads, which is certainly in the public interest. I thank you for your consideration of this important legislation, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Kundi, do you charge the same rates for your triple play in the north area of Prior Lake as you do in the south?
I don't actually offer any triple play services today because that would include video, and that's what the issue is. We're hung up on that. Secondly, I don't serve the northern areas of Prior Lake.
I don't know.
Quest is the local telephone provider there.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Cundy, I'm kind of have a selfish reason for asking this. Part of my district is being covered here, but the same example that you gave at the Credit River Township is true also of, say, Webster Township.
Webster Madam Chair, Senator, yes, it would be Webster
Mr.
Township,
Cundy.
Spring Lake Township, Newmarket Township. All of those townships would have this same issue. And once again, I would like to bring services over a period of time to all of those townships.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Mr. Cundy, so in one word, they, by passing this legislation, the people of, say, Webster Township will have greater access, possibly, to the services that
yes, obviously, Madam Chair. Senator, yes, I would have to negotiate a franchise with Webster Township to go in to offer video services, and that would be a process that we would go through. But it would be a process that we could go through unencumbered by lots of build-out requirements.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I'll start with Senator Dibble. Okay, what we're doing here is if it's a telephone company in the area, that they wouldn't be held to the same more or less favorable burdensome provision in this, the franchising statute. So if Quest is in my area, can they now use this to start to provide services through their telephone lines instead of using, you know, the satellite service that they now use for providing, you know, video and things like that? Or is this, are they going to have some other issues that they'd have to overcome?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understand the question correctly, the answer is yes, Quest would be able to provide video and, or, you know, cable video and internet service through their telephone lines. The catch is, of course, they couldn't just serve your neighborhood, and if they're serving the next door neighborhood as well, fail to serve that neighborhood. They would have to serve all the neighborhoods that they serve within a given city.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Senator Dibble. So wherever they have service now, they could provide that service through there, like we're trying to do with your company, sir, that wherever you have telephone lines now is where you want to be able to provide the video service. And so Quest could do the same thing then.
Right. And
Senator Dibble.
And Madam Chair, yeah, and there are instances where Quest does serve an entire municipality. And is, you know, and so doesn't run into this issue of service territories that don't necessarily relate to, you know, municipal boundaries.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or comments? Okay, then I'd like to call on Brent Christensen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. My name is Brent Christensen. I'm with the Minnesota Telecom Alliance. The Minnesota Telecom Alliance represents 86 telcos, primarily family-owned and co-ops throughout Minnesota, providing service to over 50% of the geography in the state. The MTA supports House File 2535. This bill will begin to remove barriers for competition in providing video services. When telcos decide to provide video, they do so as part of the triple play: voice, broadband, and video. Often the triple play is the only way that a provider can justify the cost of the necessary new infrastructure. These three services are deployed over the same infrastructure as their traditional telephone service. Constraints on deploying one service constrains all the services. Thus, franchise and regulatory constraints on video deployment can hamper deployment of broadband. This bill will assist providers in deploying video, voice, and broadband in cities and townships where there are two telcos certified by the Public Utilities Commission to serve different parts of city or township. Finally, we need to remember that we are not talking about a telephone company going into another company's area and poaching customers. We're talking about an existing service provider offering new services to their customers. And that's the end of my testimony if you have any questions.
Okay. Questions or comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
Tom Grundhofer.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Grundhofer, General Counsel with the League of Minnesota Cities. I won't belabor the points that have been made here today other than to say that the League of Minnesota Cities does support this legislation. As has already been alluded to, this topic is a subject, and the issues at play here are the subject of a Court of Appeals matter right now. Frankly, cities have presumed they've had this authority for quite a while. Mediacom will take the position that less burdensome, no less favorable, means they have to be actually equal. I don't think law supports that either here or nationally or at the federal level. We view this as a clarification of existing law. We support this legislation. We just want to support Prior Lake in this, and we encourage this for all cities as a way of helping their citizens, frankly, get the kind of competition in the cable area that they aren't seeing right now. We don't think this either really enlarges or contracts the existing authority that local governments have in the franchise area. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Grundhofer? Thank you. Next is Jane Bremer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jane Bremer. I'm legal counsel to Mediacom Communications. There are also Mediacom representatives here as well as representatives of other cable television companies in the audience if there are any questions that you might have for them. The expectation of fair play is ingrained in Minnesota's culture and embodied in its laws. We strive as a society to assure that everyone is treated equally and that our laws and regulations allow everyone to have a fair shot. So why is this bill before you that seeks to favor one class of telephone company in one area of the law? The reason this bill is before you is that one company made a business decision to ignore Minnesota law in one city. We would respectfully submit that a one company, one city problem is not grounds for upending a fair statewide statute that virtually every other city and company in the state have complied with. The reason this bill is before you is that the city of Prior Lake granted two franchises, Mediacom's, which requires construction throughout the entire community, and Integra's, which requires construction only in 60% of the community. Right. Mediacom does not and has never opposed fair competition, and I'd like to say that again. Mediacom does not and has never opposed fair competition. All Minnesota franchises are by law non-exclusive. So to describe any cable company as a monopoly is completely incorrect. This legislature in the 1970s, when it originally adopted the Minnesota Cable Act, stated in law that all franchises would be non-exclusive, and that has been the law of the land in this state ever since. Mediacom provides service throughout Minnesota, primarily in outstate Minnesota. Mediacom has telephone company competition in over 30 Minnesota communities, and each of those telephone companies have obtained franchises that conform to Minnesota law and offer competitive services to the entire community. They can be found in southeast Minnesota in St. Charles, southwest Minnesota in Morris, Central Minnesota in St. Peter, and Northern Minnesota in Grand Rapids. Competition only works when the rules are the same for everyone and are applied in a fair and neutral manner. Mediacom does oppose unfair competition. It undermines the ability to invest in new products and services, to create jobs and support public services such as free service to public buildings, community programming channels, and the like. It also undermines the ability to extend service to areas of a community that may not otherwise be economically viable. It's important for this body to recognize that telephone companies had guaranteed profits to build out their plant over the 100 and some years that they've been building out telephone plant. Cable has never had such a guarantee. It's always been a matter of going out and proving the worth of your product to the customer. Finally, unfair competition creates winners and losers. And the benefits of fair competition should be available to all residents, not just the lucky few. Competition is just one of the many goals for cable regulation in Minnesota. Minnesota has been a leader in facilitating statewide standards for cable operators, both large and small, in both large and small communities, assuring that all communities in the state receive qualified service providers and comparable protections. Minnesota has also led the way in assuring community programming opportunities in every community. These goals require regulatory even-handedness rather than decisions that choose who wins and who loses. Only Integra is unable or unwilling to comply with this law. They don't want to invest an amount equal to that required by the incumbent cable operator, or they don't want to compete with their fellow telephone companies. It's a simple process to amend a certificate of authority to compete with other telephone companies. The Minnesota Telephone Association just described that as poaching customers, but I suspect most of this group would call it competition. Either way, Integra has made a choice to ignore the law, which they now want this body to fix for them. It is not necessary for the legislature to address this matter. First, this matter was disputed in Prior Lake and is on the calendar for oral argument at the Minnesota Court of Appeals in March. The rational approach is to let this matter reach a verdict in that court. And there's no delay in service. Integra has announced that it's going to commence providing service in April in Prior Lake. So presumably they will go forward with that representation. Second, in the adjacent city of Savage, Integra, the city, and Mediacom have all agreed to language in Integra's franchise that provides for citywide build-out, including those areas beyond Integra's existing telephone service area. This approach could certainly be replicated in Prior Lake if Integra offered to Prior Lake this option. But that option was not presented to the city of Prior Lake. Prior Lake was given an either-or choice. These two venues where Integra and all parties have the opportunity to resolve the issue and where Integra could solve its own problems if it chose to should give the legislature more than ample cause to set this matter aside. If not, Mediacom would submit that cities should not have the ability to enforce requirements in existing franchises to build out beyond proposed system boundaries as a matter of fairness. The regulatory scheme for telecommunications may deserve a fresh and comprehensive look by the legislature. Telephone companies and cable companies started from different places regulatorily. They've moved closer together. The services are becoming more confusing, as Senator Dibble pointed out, and that's certainly a fair statement. But we cannot support a one-company, one-solution fix to an issue that was self-inflicted by Integra, will likely be resolved with the court and has already been resolved through amicable negotiations in the city of Savage. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions of the testifier?
Madam Chair.
Senator Alcine.
Well, to the League of Minnesota Cities point that cities have taken this position, and this just clarifies it in law, how do you relate that to your statement? They seem to conflict each other.
I've actually Bremmer. Never heard that statement before, and I've been working in this industry for over 30 years. When this bill was originally passed, the level playing field provision, it was supported by the League of Cities. So I can't speak for them. They'd have to explain that for you.
Well, actually, Senator Alcine, it's written as clarifying language. That's the purpose that this body is taking this up.
Right, but his testimony, Madam Chair, was that cities have taken this position and they've assumed they've had it. This clarifies that they would have it. Okay. And so that was my question. I see why this is in court.
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I've not heard that position before in my personal experience.
Any further questions or comments? Senator Sharon.
One of the things I heard from the other testifiers is that without this assistance, that the capacity to compete, the environment in which competition can occur is impossible on a numbers basis, on an economic basis. They're not capable. Are we, if we do not support this, are we sustaining a system that prohibits the ability of companies to compete because they are have not been in the business long enough or over a longer period of time, that gives the existing businesses a competitive advantage, and then the rules further protect them from competition?
Ms. Bremer.
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, I would submit to you that that is a position unique to Integra. As I mentioned, Mediacom has competition in 30 communities right now from telephone companies in Minnesota, and I've got a list of those for the committee if anyone is interested. There is competition throughout the state from telephone companies and from other providers of video service offering triple play service in communities throughout the state. It is a misnomer to say that one cannot compete if this law does not change, because it's simply not supported by the facts.
Well, Madam.
Senator Dipple.
I don't think I represented anything to the contrary. There is absolutely competition. In response to Senator Dahl's question, I pointed out that in those circumstances where a telephone company serves an entire city, you know, this issue is the subject of this discussion is moot. But in those instances where you see on these maps, the answer to your question is absolutely yes. And I think that's the point that Integra made very well.
Ms. Bremer, I have a question. Does franchise law require that a cable company charge the same rates for all its customers in their franchise territory?
Madam Chairman, no, it does not.
So there are variable rates. If you're serving prior like, you can charge different rates in the north than you do in the south?
There are a lot of factors that go into establishing rates, as you might imagine. Cities impose particular costs on companies that are unique to those cities. Some cities impose more, others impose less. Depending on the system, there may be capital costs, operating costs. You know, it's certainly more difficult to extend service in less dense areas than in more dense areas. So there are a lot of factors that go into making into the rate decision.
So they don't get absorbed by the whole city and then apportioned equally throughout the city. They get concentrated in the area that had the highest capital?
I think it's fair to say that most cable companies, and some of the cable companies might be able to answer this question better than I, but most cable companies want to try to maintain consistent rates just from a marketing and a consumer perspective, that it's very confusing to customers to have different rates for different things, and it doesn't make a lot of sense from a business perspective.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you, Ms. Bremer.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Senator Sharon, did you have a question?
Well, I could ask Senator Dibble this question. I'm just trying to be absolutely clear about what this legislation, if passed, does. So is it narrow enough in the language that it addresses this unique situation, or does it have a broader implication for telephone companies throughout the state and cable franchise companies?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It addresses this unique situation insofar as this unique situation is found throughout the state.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Then, Senator Dipple, what's your pleasure?
Madam Chair, also, I keep hearing this, mention of this lawsuit. I just wanted to clarify, just so it's on the record and it's clear for the committee's purposes in their consideration, that this legislation is prospective. It's not retrospective. It's not retroactive. And in fact, the lawsuit, and I think the city manager, Prior Lake, was clear on this point as well. I just want to emphasize it. The facts are all in on the case, and the case will be decided on the statute as it currently exists. And so we're not interfering in any lawsuit. To be sure, this lawsuit has highlighted a problem or a question in the law that we, you know, as a legislature should answer going forward if we agree that there needs to be clarification. But we're not reaching into a lawsuit if folks are concerned about that. So, Madam Chair, with that, I'd like to move that Senate File 2535 be recommended to pass, and I believe Senator Rest would like to see it in her committee, so refer to the Committee on State and Local Government.
On Senator Dahl's motion, are there any comments or questions? Yep. Then on his motion, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair and members.
Senator Bach.
Oh, did I? I'm sorry. Did I?
I've noticed you got a little.
Sorry, I called Senator Dahl, Senator Dibble, Senator Dahl. I don't know which Dahl I was referring to.
Now we're all confused.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to present Senate File 2532. This is the first committee that this bill has been in front of, and there is an amendment I'd like to have somebody offer so we could get the bill into the shape the author would like it in.
It's the A2 amendment.
I'll move that, Madam Chair.
Okay, on the author's amendment, then, all those in favor, please signify. All those in favor, please signify. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me back up. A number of years ago, Cook County up in my district, and just so that you're all familiar with the area we're speaking about, it's a large piece of the north shore of Lake Superior, really kind of the tip of the state, sticking out into Lake Superior and then following along the Canadian border. For a number of years, they had a local option sales tax to pay for capital improvements at the hospital and then later at their nursing home. And those bonds were paid off and that tax expired. The county then came to me with a number of other projects that they wanted to undertake and wanted to run another referendum and see if they could find the support for reinstating the 1% local option sales tax. The legislature did approve the language and the projects in the tax bill in 2008. And one of the uses in the tax bill that was passed was the construction and improvement of a countywide high-speed communication infrastructure network. That's one of the uses of their sales tax. The reason that the county is needing to put that infrastructure in on their own is because Cook County is such very dispersed population. And many of you are probably familiar with the Gunflint Trail and the low density of people that live along that. Cook County is about 91% publicly owned land, and there's about a little over 5,000 people live in the county. About 1,100 of them live in the city of Grand Marais. So, and really outside of the city of Grand Marais, there really are only a couple very small municipalities. In fact, they may actually be towns rather than cities. Very dispersely populated. The local phone provider really hasn't had interest in extending high speed out into the countryside because there's just not a lot of users out there. So the county felt that the only way they were ever going to get service would be if the county took that on themselves. And that was one of the uses they wanted for their local option sales tax. Commissioner Fenwick from Cook County is here. I'd like to have him speak to it. They did run a referendum and the sales tax did pass last fall. And then the second question, allowing them to set up their own exchange to then deliver it, which needed 65%, passed, but not by the 65% threshold. So we're here to ask you to amend the law to allow them to just with a majority vote be able to provide that service to their citizenry. So, Madam Chair, if I could have Commissioner Fenwick speak to the issue, I'd appreciate it.
Commissioner Fenwick.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. I am Bob Fenwick, Commissioner in Cook County.
And forgive me, I need to give you a little context in which to put this. Senator Bach was kind enough to illustrate the geography of Cook County. I'd like to put Cook County in the context of what we're talking about today, and that's communications. And I'd like to use two words to describe Cook County in that relationship. We could be considered very isolated, and we can be considered very antiquated. Most of our infrastructure could be described as antiquated, copper, needing to be replaced, very failure-prone. That is the situation in which we find ourselves and found ourselves when we embarked on our process to look at high-speed broadband. If I could ask you as I speak about this, this may sound silly, but I'd like to have you think about the relationship of Cook County to the state and maybe other rural counties of our type as leaves on a tree, especially as it relates to what we're talking about here, and that's communication. If we are the leaves on the tree, we are fed through the arteries or the capillaries of the tree. In the past, those arteries were fully the road system in Minnesota and nationwide. That has changed over the past decades. And now to be a player nationally, statewide, internationally, to be in touch economically, it is not only important to have the infrastructure or the capillaries of the roads, but it is absolutely necessary that you have the infrastructure, the capillaries of a broadband system. And just like a tree, the health of the tree depends upon how healthy those leaves are. And I would contend that throughout the state, Cook County being one, the health of Cook County economically is very important to the overall health of the state. And so to provide the necessary infrastructure for Cook County to be competitive economically and can continue to sustain all of the things it needs to do, education, hospitals, all the things that the citizenry requires, needs this infrastructure. As I indicated, the roads used to be that infrastructure. We have, like we do for our communications, one road in and out of Cook County. We have Highway 61. I would venture to say that if Highway 61 were closed for any necessary period of time, we couldn't get our food in a very good way. Well, and as you found with the cutting of a fiber in Duluth, we had predicted that if such an event did occur, that Cook County would be totally isolated communication-wise, literally out of phone, out of cell phone, out of internet, out of some radio, out of some television. That happened, as I know my chair, Madam Chair, knows very well, and we were down totally for about 12 hours one day, a rude awakening for many of our citizens who weren't aware how totally isolated they could be under such a circumstance. So what I'm saying to you today now in this need to communicate and that need to use Highway 61, if people are going to continue to use Highway 61 to come to Cook County, if people are going to use Highway 61 to come back again and visit us, if people are going to use Highway 61 to come and actually stay in our community, if people are going to use Highway 61 and if we are going to be able to share our economic wealth and our economic prosperity with the rest of the state, we need high-speed broadband. And I say real broadband. I won't go into definitions today, but even the legislature needs to think about what that high-speed broadband actually means. And for Cook County, because of our geography, that means fiber infrastructure. We have no choice. It is only fiber that can provide that for our citizens. So with that need in mind, and with the knowledge of the need of that redundant path out of our community, we embarked on this process. As Senator Bach indicated, the reason we did this is if no one else would, we had to. And so we embarked on the process. We put ourselves out for a feasibility study to be done on whether broadband was feasible in Cook County. We chose a reputable firm to gain a reputable feasibility study. That study involved a survey of all of the users or a phone survey of a significant number of users in the community. The survey indicated that to the question of if given the opportunity to take part in broadband network at a reasonable price operated in and by Cook County, would they take part? And the response was an overwhelming over 90%, a number that this group had never seen before. From that survey, we developed a workable business plan, and that workable business plan had in it revenue costs that would be enough to cover the initial investment and to make sure the taxpayers of Cook County were safe. But that business plan depended upon, just as any private business plan would do in this area, it depended upon revenues from phone service. Those revenues are very lucrative, 25% of the revenues of a triple play plan for Cook County, as I heard being talked about earlier. I wish I was having the argument that they're having. I'd love to have a fight over who was going to serve Cook County. Those revenues depend on that revenue from the phones. 25%, as I say, come from phones. And of that 25%, it is the most margin available for all the revenues. As Senator Bach indicated, we passed the referendum to have the 1% sales tax used for what we were going to use it for. Overwhelmingly, over 65% of the people said, yes, we'd like to see this happen. I believe because of the confusion involved with the question, as simple as it is, can the county have a telephone exchange with all the ramifications that has to people in their minds, business versus non-business, public versus private, all those things. That didn't pass the 65%, but it got about 57%, which in a national election could be used to be a particularly good mandate. So here we are today in front of you asking you to consider how the legislature might help us. My request is based upon what I just shared with you, and it is also founded on what the Task Force for Broadband Services in the state of Minnesota is bringing out to the public now. Through that process, there were several things that were in there that are important to Cook County, which I hope will be important to you in this discussion. First of all, they reaffirmed what we, I think, really knew, that Cook County, of all the 87 counties, was the least served of all of the counties for broadband services. And I would expand that a bit further. If the changes aren't made in Cook County that allow us to get at least, and I say at least, 20 megabytes per second download, we will be unserved as far as broadband is concerned in the future. And the future is pretty bleak as far as that happening without something like this being the case. It also established broad goals, broadband goals for the broadband system. Again, if our infrastructure stayed the same or even got upgraded to the point that some of the telecoms want to do it, we could not meet those guidelines. And as I understand, those guidelines are to be met hopefully by 2015. It also indicated that where the privates could not, would not, or for whatever reason were unable to meet the needs of the community, that the government had the obligation to step in and help. But within that plan, or within the advice from that task force, there was no action plan. And I don't mean this to be unkind. It's just a fact. It's kind of like the state of Minnesota people getting together and saying, you know what we really need to do is have the Minnesota Vikings be the fifth best team in the country day in and day out and go to the Super Bowl at least every 4 years and then end the discussion with no action plan. What we're asking the legislature to do is take the recommendations from that task force and start to make some action plans to bring it forward. Make the assumptions that that task force has into reality. Of course, the state has no money. Heck, we know we have no money. And so the action plan from the state cannot be in the form of send Cook County some money to make this happen. But I would say in the context of the question before us, there are some things that can be done. And I would put it in this way. Where in the state, in the area, there obviously is a great need. And I emphasize the word need because what we're asking for here to serve Cook County is not frivolous. It's not the ability to go to your iPod and do the apps or to find the directions to a restaurant or something like that. It's really life and death. It's a situation where we have told citizens who are in our state today that you need to live in a world where when you become disabled, unable to leave your home, if you want to be cared for, you will have this button. You push it, it will dial 911 and we'll come and get you. But what that lady didn't know or that man didn't know on the day that we had that fiber cut in Duluth is when they pushed that button, nobody heard them. And they didn't know that. And so we need to provide the infrastructure that will make that happen. We are putting people in that situation. Where we have a willing citizenry that will take on this project, that is willing to pay to do the project, and where we can provide a public solution that is well thought out, that has a business plan that will work, that has revenues that will protect the taxpayers. Where that exists, we would request that this legislature use the phone revenue, allow us to use the phone revenue, and find that revenue available to us more accessible in an easier way. This legislation would do that. Lastly, I want to emphasize, We, the county, Cook County, did not seek this out. We are not looking to own a phone franchise. We are not looking to own a cable franchise. If in my heart I could build it and sell it tomorrow, I would. This is not the point, nor is the point to try to compete. It is the final solution that we came to after many, many other solutions were exhausted and we could not do it. So with that, I would stand for any questions in this regard and hope that the legislature can, among other things that are involved in this broadband questions this year that are coming from the task force, move this forward.
Commissioner Fenwick, do you have any speculation as to why anybody would vote against this in your county?
You mean the 65%? Yes, I think no, it comes...
I mean, why 49% of the voters voted against the
about
provision?
About 44%.
44, okay.
Madam Chair, I would put it in the context of what people have as far as philosophies regarding public and private as a big part of this. I cannot argue with the fact that there is this dilemma that exists whether public entities should compete with private entities. And even though there is an overwhelming desire on the part of all of the people, 65%, to have the right to have this broadband there, they are torn on the issue of whether or not public should have the right to compete with the privates. And they aren't really privy to all the discussions that we had, and that was exhausting all the other solutions that we could possibly have and only settling on the fact that we had to do it ourselves. I would add one more thing. Part of the reason we embarked down this road, during the feasibility study that we were doing, the stimulus package came into being. And like other places in the country, we decided to move that stimulus package and make that feasibility study into a grant application. That forced us to make a decision as to how we were going to have this structure owned. And we had no choice at the time than to do this. So for our people, Madam Chair, it was quite a confusing issue at that time.
But were you not saying that you wanted to contract with a private company to build this out?
Initially, our plan was to contract, actually have a private company own and build it out, correct?
Okay. And you have a private service up there now?
We have several phone services. Actually, the private company that was initially going to build out the service for Cook County was our Arrowhead Electric Cooperative. That was the initial plan that we had. We have at least two or three different phone services up there and at least one cable service that serves our area.
I can't imagine why any municipality or county would not want to have the ability to have competition to drive down rates.
I don't either.
And any other further questions or comments? Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Fenwick, I can't quite tell from the language here, so you'll have to have another special election if we approve this, where just a majority of the voters would need to approve it. Is that correct?
I think I'd be totally out there if I were to say to you, make this legislation retroactive and say you don't have to go on another election. But, yeah, I would prefer that. But I think, yes, our stance would be we would have to go back to the voters under those circumstances and ask the question again.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't have
Senator
a copy
Bach.
Of the amendment. Maybe Mr. Fuller can tell us. And the amendment, I suspect that what Senator Olsen said is true, but maybe we should have counsel firm that up.
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, I believe it is true. The law in effect at the time the vote was held required a 65% vote, and you can't move the law back there and change the rules unless you actually provided for it in the law, and I'm not sure you could do that. I don't think you can.
Other questions or comments? Well, Senator Bach, I'm disappointed in your amendment. And I think that what is fair for one jurisdiction is fair for the entire state. I was actually very pleased with your original legislation that was being proposed. And I'm going to pass this over to Senator Dahl, and I have an amendment.
Bretner Solon?
I'm actually, Mr. Fuller has drafted it, and I'm going to ask him to read it, please.
Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Chairman, members, what this amendment does is it deletes the amendment that was put on, and I'll explain it in detail. Goes back to the original bill and adds a definition that makes it clear that a municipality includes county. So the amendment would be to amend Senate File 2532, which is now the delete everything amendment, by deleting lines 3 to 12 of that amendment. That's the whole amendment. And adding in the original Senate File 2532, which you have, lines 6 to 20, so the whole bill. And then adding on line 20 after the period, for the purpose of this section, a municipality includes a county, so that it makes it explicit. So you would then have the majority vote for any county that wants to engage in the endeavor that is covered by this section, operating a telephone exchange in various circumstances.
Are there any questions from members regarding that amendment? Senator Rosen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, I'm in support of this amendment, Senator Prentner-Solo's amendment, because my question to Senator Bach was, I'm a little confused why we had to have the A2 amendment, when I, too, felt like it was covered in the original statutes with some changes. So I'm in support of that amendment.
Further questions? Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, I'd be curious to see what Senator Bach's opinion would be.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Olsen, Representative Dill and I had a problem in our county. Our citizens voted by a wide margin to tax themselves to do this, over 65%. And then when it came to the question of who should run it, by a majority they felt the county should, but not by 65%. So the bill was drafted over on the House side, and for whatever reason they took a wider view than just the problem that we had at hand. And when people started to come see me about the bill, I thought, you know, it might be best to just get back to the problem that I came here with, rather than get into a whole menu of people that are going to want to testify on it. I think it was at the point where there probably wasn't any opposition, because I think most people understand the unique situation in Cook County. I guess it's up to the committee. I was just trying to solve a problem in a county that I represent. But if the committee wants to take a larger view of that, I guess I can be the carrier of it and would be willing to be.
Yeah. Senator Prentner-Solon.
Senator Dahl and Senator Bach, I think that while Cook County may seem like an isolated case, there are many communities that are in similar situations. And I think that this would be fair legislation for the entire state.
Madam Chair, are there other areas, and I don't know, are there other areas that just can't get anybody to serve them?
I mean, my
situation, oh, I'm sorry, Senator Dahl, my personal situation at home is I don't have high speed. DSL is not available. I can't get it. I end up putting a satellite up on my roof, and it's lousy. I probably shouldn't have invested the money in a satellite. My phone line was probably just as fast, and I can't get it. There is no competition. I just can't get it from anybody. And that's the situation on Lake Vermilion, and that's the situation in a big piece of Cook County. And I guess I'd be curious, are there a lot of other places in the state, kind of like my place on Lake Vermilion, where I can't get it from anybody? I mean, it's not a matter of competition. I imagine there probably is, but.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Senator Dahl, Senator Bach, we just passed broadband goals, and we found that our penetration in many areas is very poor, and that there is only one county, actually, in the entire state that met the 15% broadband penetration rate that we're aiming for. I think I'd like to ask the League of Cities if maybe they have some information about if there are other areas like Cook County that are unable to get providers.
Welcome to the committee. And just if you could identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Ann Higgins. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Madam Chair and members of the committee, to respond to your question, the league doesn't systematically track that information, but we have been watching for some years the numbers of areas of the state where this same law caused a problem, namely that the 65% wasn't reached, 58%, on years ago in the city of Windham, which was waiting for an upgrade way before we had the kinds of services we have as a result of broadband today. Didn't get it, and the Toro factory there was definitely in need of more services, and they had health care and other issues, educational issues they were trying to address. Finally decided to put up a referendum, and the first time it was back in 1995, so more than 10 years ago. So just to respond directly, they went to a second referendum, even with the 65, and made it because their citizens were so angry when they realized what had happened, that they didn't get the service because they did vote 57% and they needed 65, that they literally launched a campaign. But to be clear, there are numbers of applications in at this moment to the federal government for stimulus funds from areas of the state where the lack of service at the quality that is needed for the future has presented itself without answers. And communities, many of them going across county lines, as many as five or seven cities together, and institutions within those areas trying to get the kind of service that Cook County is trying to get.
Yeah, Senator Prentice-Solon.
Mr. Chair, and I think it's only a matter of democracy. Why do we need a supermajority on a vote from a community anyways? So.
Makes sense to me.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
did you have a question?
That's exactly my question. Where did the 65% come from, and what was the rationale for that, if anybody knows the answer to that?
I think Ms. Higgins does.
Well, Madam Chairman, I learned a little bit when I introduced this. One of the things I learned that this was put in law in 1912, and I don't think we probably know what the legislative intent was back then. We probably don't have any tapes of it, so we'd only be speculating.
Okay. Madam Chair.
I'm
sorry.
Senator Dahl.
Senator Dahl.
I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
I think things are quite upside down from when they were back in 1912, 1915. To have the, small telephone companies, rural telephone companies, and municipal telephone companies be protected was important then, perhaps, part of the issue. But what is upside down now is that's not the case. These are huge companies. And we're not talking just about telephone. As the people indicated just before me, this fiber or whatever the network is going to carry all three things that we need to have. And so it's not just the telephone, and it's that telephone revenue that is stopping these entities from getting the revenue they need to go forward. And I would add this. I'm speaking of Cook County, obviously, because Cook County is me. But anecdotally, no, this is an issue for a lot of areas of the state. I know it is. And with the things upside down the way they are, what pressure does a county commissioner or a citizen of a community have to bring forward to make these things happen in their community, if not to say to these people, if you don't do it, we must. It's not that we want to. It's that we have to, that we, our citizens, need this. And so it is a fine line, yes. I don't know how to describe the relationship between public and private as it goes to this, except to say that we are not back in 1915, and we do need to have as much leverage to make sure that someone, whether it's the privates or the public, gets this service out to every citizen. It is a necessity today, and it can't be postponed.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move forward on 2532 as amended.
We have to vote on the amendment.
Sorry.
Were there any other questions or comments on the amendment? Then all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted.
You can finish.
And Senator Olsen, unless there's other comments or questions, moves that Senate file 2532 be approved as amended. I'm sorry. I probably moved a little too fast. Was there one other testifier here? Okay, I didn't have you on my list. My apologies. Come to the table and...
Senator Dahl, I'll take the
okay.
chair back. Mr. Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Just to clarify the point about the 65% majority, as I stated, the Minnesota Telecom Alliance represents 86 telephone companies in Minnesota, and that is, from our perspective, the supermajority is in place as a checks and balance against government agencies being able to tax and raise bonds and revenues to compete in the private sector. One of the problems that all of our members are finding, and even my family's company is finding, is the reduction in access lines. And that affects business cases, and that has a serious detriment to making a case. If you're basing it on making on telephone lines, that whole world is changing. So I would really strongly urge you to go back to the amendment. We could support, and we didn't, we could support the amendment that deals with Cook County because that's an isolated incident. But there are checks and balances in place that allow, that protect the consumers, protect the taxpayers from getting into, from municipalities getting into private business. There are times when the provider doesn't step up. There are times when that needs to be done. There's no question about that. But this 65% ensures that the taxpayers don't get into a business that is not feasible.
Senator Dibb.
Well, Madam Chair, this is awkward. I think the principle that underlied the bill we just passed onto Senator S's committee, my bill, is at play here. And in fact, earlier today, or was it yesterday, I asked Senator Bach not to be named as a co-author on this bill. I think the points that you make and the point that County Administrator has made and Senator Bach has made about being able to provide competition, provide service where there is none, both of the principles that were the foundation of my bill are true in Senator Bach's bill. So I strongly support it.
Yeah, and committee members, the municipality sometimes has to do something to help build competition. If they can't bring other companies into the area, they may have to build out the line and then sell it out or lease it out so there can be other competition. We have to find ways to provide services to our communities at a reasonable rate.
Madam Chairman, I agree with that and I understand that.
Mr. Christensen.
The purpose of the supermajority makes local government work with the private sector first, and it makes them make sure that they've exhausted all the avenues. I'm a former mayor of a town of 2,300. I understand that. And I understand that it's important that government did not get into the private sector unless there are no other alternatives. And this supermajority allows that process to happen. And it makes sure that the rights of the taxpayers are protected.
And Mr. Christensen, I'd contend that a majority would require that the community would have to work with the developer too. Senator Dibble.
Well, Madam Chair, it's not as if though the private interests don't get involved in the outcome of these elections, and I
right.
think that's a dynamic that was at play in this particular circumstance. And so, you know, to force municipalities to, you know, I don't know that an argument totally stands up to scrutiny if we examine the facts of this particular circumstance in which funds were expended to defeat this effort at the polls by private interests. So, again, I refer to my earlier points.
Okay. Other comments or questions? Thank you, Mr. Christensen. Senator Sharon.
We don't need to keep belabor this, excepting I will. I appreciated thinking about the context out of which the 65% was in, and it's important to me to have some kind of principle in place for why we're – that's the essential part of the bill is to change that. So I appreciated thinking about how long ago that was and that that there may have been a good reason at that time in relationship to telecommunication or telephone companies to protect them in that environment, that context doesn't exist anymore, and we haven't reviewed it in a long time. But I also want to say 50% vote on something like this is not easy to get. We have had many votes in my communities trying to accomplish things that engage the public sector into activities that people would like to see remain in the private sector, and it is not easy even at 50% to get that accomplished without everybody being involved in a broad political discussion about the implications. So I support the amendment.
Okay. Senator Alcine renews his motion that Senate File 2532 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the State and Local Government Operations Committee. On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I think this bill got a little bit heavier, so I think there's still room for authors. So if you feel like you might like to help, please put your name up at the desk on Monday. But thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Members, I will not be here on Tuesday. Senator Dahl will be chairing the committee. I'm at a